Hello, beautiful Madrons. Welcome to the September reading. This is Priestess Kat Lupton, welcoming us to the season turning and the approach of autumn and autumn equinox. And here in Avalon, we've had a very, very dry summer. Yet in the last week, finally, the rains came, and almost every day we've been blessed by rain. And what I've observed this year, and many others have observed, is that many of the fruits are arriving about a month ahead of when we would usually expect them. So I'm sitting in my office looking into my back garden, and looking at the haws on the hawthorn tree and the rose hips on the rose bush, knowing that I've harvested some apples from my garden, from my beautiful apple tree. And these are all things I would expect to see and be doing around the middle of September, yet they've been here since about the middle of August. And in this season, we look at these beautiful fruits, the nuts, the harvest. And I turned my mind to this reading, and what I've chosen for you is an extract from Robin Wall Kimmerer's absolutely beautiful book, Braiding Sweet Grass, which has so much generosity and wisdom to offer us and to teach. And this is a section from the chapter which is called The Honourable Harvest. The guidelines for the honourable harvest are not written down, or even consistently spoken of as a whole. They are reinforced in small acts of daily life. But if you were to list them, they might look something like this. Know the ways of the ones who take care of you, so that you may take care of them. Introduce yourself. Be accountable as the one who comes asking for life. Ask permission before taking. Abide by the answer. Never take the first. Never take the last. Take only what you need. Take only that which is given. Never take more than half. Leave some for others. Harvest in a way that minimizes harm. Use it respectfully. Never waste what you have taken. Share. Give thanks for what you have been given. Give a gift in reciprocity for what you have taken. Sustain the ones who sustain you, and the earth will last forever. The state guidelines on hunting and gathering are based exclusively in the biophysical realm, while the rules of the honourable harvest are based on accountability to both the physical and the metaphysical worlds. The taking of another life to support your own is far more significant when you recognise the beings who are harvested as persons, non-human persons vested with awareness, intelligence, spirit, and who have families waiting for them at home. Killing a who demands something different than killing an it. When you regard those non-human persons as kinfolk, another set of harvesting regulations extends beyond bag limits and legal seasons. The state regulations are, by and large, lists of illegal practices. It is unlawful to keep a rainbow trout whose length from snout to posterior fin does not exceed 12 inches. The consequences for breaking the law are clearly stipulated and involve a financial transaction after a visit with your friendly conservation officer. Unlike the state laws, the honourable harvest is not an enforced legal policy. But it is an agreement nonetheless, among people and most especially between consumers and providers. The providers have the upper hand. The deer, the sturgeon, the berries and the leeks say, if you follow these rules, we will continue to give our lives so that you may live. Imagination is one of our most powerful tools. What we imagine, we can become. I like to imagine what it would be like if the honourable harvest were the law of the land today, as it was in our past. Imagine if a developer, eyeing open land for a shopping mall, had to ask the goldenrod, the meadowlarks and the monarch butterflies for permission to take their homeland. What if he had to abide by the answer? Why not? I like to imagine a laminated card, like the one my friend the town clerk hands out with the hunting and fishing licenses, embossed with the rules of the honourable harvest. Everyone will be subject to the same laws, since they are, after all, the dictates of the real government, the democracy of species, the laws of Mother Nature. When I ask my elders about the ways our people lived in order to keep the world whole and healthy, I hear the mandate to take only what you need. But we human people, descendants of Nanabozo, struggle as he did with self-restraint. The dictum to take only what you need leaves a lot of room for interpretation when our needs get so tangled with our wants. This grey area yields then to a rule more primal than need, an old teaching nearly forgotten now in the din of industry and technology. Deeply rooted in cultures of gratitude, this ancient rule is not just to take only what you need, but to take only that which is given. At the level of human interactions, we already do this. It's what we teach our kids. If you're visiting your sweet grandma and she offers you homemade cookies on her favourite china plate, you know what to do. You accept them with many thank yous and cherish the relationship reinforced by cinnamon and sugar. You gratefully take what has been given. But you wouldn't dream of breaking into her pantry and just taking all the cookies without invitation, grabbing her china plate for good measure. That would be at a minimum a breach of good manners, a betrayal of the loving relationship. What's more, your grandma would be heartbroken and not inclined to bake more cookies for you anytime soon. As a culture, though, we seem unable to extend these good manners to the natural world. The dishonourable harvest has become a way of life. We take what doesn't belong to us and destroy it beyond repair. On Ondaga Lake, the Alberta tar sands, the rainforests of Malaysia, the list is endless. They are gifts from our sweet grandmother Earth, which we take without asking. How do we find the honourable harvest again? If we're picking berries or gathering nuts, taking only what is given makes a lot of sense. They offer themselves. And by taking them, we fulfil our reciprocal responsibility. After all, the plants have made these fruits with the express purpose of our taking them, to disperse and plant. By our use of their gifts, both species prosper and life is magnified. But what about when something is taken without a clear avenue for mutual benefit, when someone is going to lose? How can we distinguish between that which is given by the earth and that which is not? When does taking become outright theft? I think my elders would counsel that there is no one path, that each of us must find our own way. In my wandering with this question, I found dead ends and clear openings. Discerning all that it might mean is like bushwhacking through dense undergrowth. Sometimes I get faint glimpses of a deer trail. It is hunting season and we are sitting on the porch of the cookhouse at Onondaga on a hazy October day. The leaves are smoky gold and fluttering down while we listen to the men tell stories. Jake, with a red bandana around his hair, gets everybody laughing with a story about Junior's never-failed turkey call. With his feet on the railing and black braid hanging over the back of his chair, Kent tells about following a blood trail over new-fallen snow, bear tracking, and the one that got away. For the most part, they're young men with reputations to build, along with one elder. In a seventh-generation ball cap and a thin grey ponytail, Oren gets his turn at a story and leads us along with him through thickets and down ravines to get to his favourite hunting spot. Smiling in recollection, he says, "I must have seen 10 deer that day, but I only took one shot." He tips his chair back and looks at the hill, remembering. The young men listen, looking intently at the porch floor. The first one came crunching through the dry leaves, but was shielded by the brush as it wove down the hill. It never saw me sitting there. Then a young buck came moving upwind toward me and then stepped behind a boulder. I could have tracked it and followed it across the creek, but I knew it wasn't the one. Deer by deer, he recounts the day's encounters for which he never even raised his rifle. The doe by the water, the three-pointer concealed behind a basswood with only its rump showing. "I only take one bullet with me," he says. The young men in t-shirts lean forward on the bench across from him. And then, without explanation, there's one who walks right into the clearing and looks you in the eye. He knows full well that you're there and what you're doing. He turns his flank right toward you for a clear shot. I know he's the one, and so does he. There's a kind of nod exchanged. "That's why I only carry one shot. I wait for the one. He gave himself to me. That's what I was taught. Take only what is given and then treat it with respect." Oren reminds his listeners, "That's why we thank the deer as the leader of the animals for its generosity in feeding the people. Acknowledging the lives that support ours and living in a way that demonstrates our gratitude is a force that keeps the world in motion." The Honourable Harvest does not ask us to photosynthesize. It does not say don't take, but offers inspiration and a model for what we should take. It's not so much a list of do-nots as a list of do's. Do eat food that is honourably harvested and celebrate every mouthful. Do use technologies that minimise harm. Do take what is given. This philosophy guides not only our taking of food, but also any taking of the gifts of Mother Earth, air, water, and the literal body of the earth, the rocks and soil and fossil fuels. Taking coal buried deep in the earth, for which we must inflict irreparable damage, violates every precept of the code. By no stretch of the imagination is coal given to us. We have to wound the land and water to gouge it from Mother Earth. What if a coal company planning mountaintop removal in the ancient folds of the Appalachians were compelled by law to take only that which is given? Don't you long to hand them the laminated card and announce that the rules have changed? It doesn't mean that we can't consume the energy we need, but it does mean that we honourably take only what is given. The wind blows every day the sun shines, every day the waves roll against the shore, and the earth is warm below us. We can understand these renewable sources of energy as given to us, since they are the sources that have powered life on the planet for as long as there has been a planet. We need not destroy the earth to make use of them. Solar, wind, geothermal, and tidal energy, the so-called clean energy harvests, when they are wisely used, seem to me to be consistent with the ancient rules of the Honourable Harvest. and the code might ask of any harvest, including energy, that our purpose be worthy of the harvest. Oren's deer made moccasins and fed three families. What will we use our energy for?